Opinions expressed in this episode are personal. They do not necessarily reflect the views of this streaming platform.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Let's Be Diverse. I am your host, Andrew Stout. This episode is dedicated to all my loved ones who have supported me through this journey. Those who have left us will always be in our hearts and will never be forgotten. Today, I got an interesting topic on tap. It's HR policy development, and my guest today is Hillary Henniger. Welcome to the show, Hillary. I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Very welcome. How are things with you? What's going on? What's new in your world? What's happening? Give us the tea, the deets, give us it all.
The deep. Gosh, there is so much happening, you know, on top of my role and doing a lot of coaching in my time on top of my day-to-day job. I also have three teenagers, and that is a wild ride. So that is fun. But, you know, for me, I think managing global teams, as we were kind of talking about this prior to jumping on here, brings with it just, you know, a different level of engagement. And I think you're always trying to think outside of the box and, you know, how can I make sure that I'm building rapport with people remotely and checking in and keeping a pulse on how things are happening. So I would say the global team component definitely keeps me on my toes. But, you know, I genuinely love what I do. I love connecting with people. I love building rapport. I love that people enjoy coming to work. That truly is my goal at the end of the day.
You just talked about my love language. Our rapport building is, again, we talked about this before we started taping. It is one of my core values. I love that. Anybody that knows me or knows me very well knows that it's super important to me and it's the essence of my existence. I really go by that on a daily basis. And it's so important to me because I feel like every conversation that I have or anybody that I meet, I just want to get to know them and I just want to get to know what they're passionate about and what their feelings are and what is important to them. And if it's important to them, then I want to remember what the things are important to them. And that just creates such a strong bond and relationship. So I just love that you'd said that.
For sure. And, you know, I think when we think about, you know, employee engagement or culture or anything along those lines, building rapport and the quality of those relationships is so critical to understanding what motivates people, to understanding people's buy-ins, to making sure that we're creating psychological safety in the workspace. And so I really think that, you know, supporting one aspect of HR really is helping managers develop better rapport with their teams, because it really is a conduit, I believe.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad to hear that things are going well. On top of your work, three teens is quite a lot of work. I would imagine they keep you on your toes on a daily basis. So, and you're sitting here talking to me today. So things must be going pretty smooth. So that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, I think having children and parenting is sort of like just being on a roller coaster, right? So you kind of just make sure you're strapped in and then you are just sort of along for the ride. You know, teenagers are fascinating. They're like these incredibly complex yet incredibly simple human beings.
Right.
And it is incredibly rewarding to watch them turn into young adults and to see the fruits of your labor and all of the seeds that you have relentlessly planted, wondering if they are taking, that they actually are.
Absolutely. I call that parent leadership because, yes, you are molding your children into the individuals that you would like them to be, which is almost like you do in your job, is you're molding your team and working with them and having your team work in the processes and the way that your team, you want it to be. So you're working hand in hand in both. It makes it a lot easier for you in the job that you do at home and at work. I could see that it makes it so much easier for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head, right? Like, parenting requires leadership. Like, at its core, that really is the essence of parenting. It's which leadership is not always fun. Sometimes it requires you to make really tough decisions and, you know, assess things from a very pragmatic space. And the same is, I think, true of parenting. And then there are lots of great aspects to it, lots of really enjoyable, rewarding parts of it. It's absolutely trying to find the balance between those two.
For sure. For sure. Well, I'm glad to hear that things are going well. And like I said, that things are going so smoothly for you. Before we begin and before we get into this interesting conversation, I always have a fun, thought-provoking question to ask my guests to get things going. Are you ready for yours today, Hillary?
I'm ready. I've heard some of these on prior podcasts. So your mind is like automatically racing. Like, what's coming?
So your question is, if you could devise a new invention, what would you create?
Oh my goodness. If I could devise... Okay, so I am a reality TV junkie, and yeah. I was watching Selling Sunset the other day, and they were walking through this walk-in closet, and within this walk-in closet was a built-in dry cleaning system. Mm-hmm. And you legitimately put your clothes in there, and then it effectively dry cleans them for you. And if you could devise something like that that took care of like laundry, dry clean, like everything, because I always feel like I can only do half the job. Like I can either get it washed but not put away, or I can get it put away and someone else has to wash it. But like if somebody could just create something in my closet so I don't have to traipse, right? Like we build houses in this way in which we have to go 2 to 3 floors to actually right. facilitate this, which also right. makes no sense to me, but builders listen up.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that is like, if I could just like have like, you know, a hole in the wall in my closet where I just threw everything in and somebody just magically like washed it, dry cleaned it, put it all away. It's like the gates would open, you know, like heaven's like music would come down. It would be amazing. That I could get behind. I feel like the value there is exponential.
I'm laughing to myself here. I talk about this. This past week, I posted something on LinkedIn and it was about laundry. I was thinking about a story about myself and how I was taught to do laundry when I was younger. And while I was doing it this past weekend, I was kind of thinking about the task of laundry and how it combines with leadership. For example, folding, it's a task and you're kind of working on that task and you're trying to figure out. So just the way of laundry, it just kind of made me think this weekend. And so I posted it and it was really interesting because I thought, well, people are going to think I'm nuts, but it actually is a very relaxing thing for me. I'm not in the same situation as most people. There's just two of us in the house. But if you have a family of 4 or 5, yes, I could see how tedious it could be. But just sitting in front of a TV or just relaxing in the quiet and folding for me is so relaxing. And it's an opportunity for me to kind of think and process things.
Right.
More than any other time.
I think isn't it Ramit Sethi who talks about, I feel like he talks about ironing his clothes as that yeah. exact thing. Like he talks about all of the things that he outsources yep. for value. And that's not one of them because for him, he derives so much enjoyment out of that and sort of like the process around that, that he for actually sure. like, no, I'm all over that. Which is, I'm like, I don't think I've owned an iron in 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I was taught to iron, but I don't think I haven't ironed in a long time. So
right.
Super interesting. Well, thanks for sharing that with me. That'd be a really cool invention. I think that would definitely help out a lot of families for sure. So thanks for having fun with me. Why don't we start off with you telling us a little about you, yourself, and of course, your why.
For sure. I come from like an HR and an operations background, and I have worked across multiple industries. And, you know, the common theme amongst all of them really is, from my perspective, like, how do we make things more efficient? How do we improve things? How do we make things better so that we can create an environment that really sets people up for success? Because I think on an individual level, when you have collectively an environment in which you can really get people to really focus on their buy-in and sort of the goal setting and making sure that they are collectively able to work together, I think mm-hmm. that's when you really get clear on those organizational goals as a whole. And I think for me, you know, my true why really is like employee well-being and culture. And I think we have all had experiences that have shaped what it means to work in, you know, we hear about toxic workplaces or unsupported work environments. And I think you would be hard pressed to not find somebody who hasn't been incredibly impacted by that experience. And so not only does that shape the decisions that they make in the future, but it also shapes their perspective on, you know, HR itself. The experiences that people have with their HR departments really does instill in them a general belief, I think, around organizations and the investment in the well-being that they have for their employees. But I think when we look at it from the perspective of, you know, a third of every day, work day, this is where we are going to spend our time. This is mm-hmm. where people are going to come and spend our time. And right. so how committed are we to making sure that we can develop psychological safety? And, you know, not just that, but it's like, In order for people to really reach their potential, which effectively is allowing the organization to succeed, the only way we can do that is by creating an environment that is conducive to those things, right? So encouraging behaviors that we want to see, you know, setting people up in terms of performance metrics. So, you know, is their performance measurable? Are they very clear on their expectations, you know, roles and responsibilities, those kinds of things. But I think employee well-being and culture really is, I think, my why. And it's funny, like people talk about culture as if it's kind of this abstract thing. And we can talk all day about building a culture that embodies certain values, but there's also like an organic component to culture. And so every single addition, every single new employee, you know, that we add to a team adjusts and changes the culture of an organization, just the DNA of it naturally, because every additional influence sort of shifts that. And so how do we, and you know, we're talking about policy today, but one thing people tend to think about policy as a bit restrictive, I think sometimes, and it certainly can be, it can certainly affect the agility of an organization. But I think if we do it right, and it's done well, we can actually use it to provide sort of a backbone to the culture that we're trying to create, so that with each additional, you know, staff member, each additional team member, I think what it actually does is reinforces the things that we are trying to maintain.
I love everything you just said there. I think it's very situational. There's a lot of people who have gone through it, and there's a lot of people who haven't gone through it. So the ones that haven't gone through it, when they hear from someone who has gone through that stuff, I believe that they struggle with it and struggle with understanding. Well, I don't understand. It's been a month and you're still struggling with this. Why are you still struggling with it? Why can't you just get over it? It's very situational. It's very for each individual and each situation. I think we just have to be a little bit more vulnerable and understanding. Just be there for people a little bit more. You mentioned that you believe in engagement, and I think that's a huge part of engagement. So we're not just talking about people who lead teams. I'm talking about everybody, even the people part of your teams, just being engaging and understanding each individual. We're not expecting people to fully understand everybody's thoughts, because you're not going to do that. It's impossible. But just be willing to understand a little bit, I think, would make a huge difference in our work world these days.
For sure. And, you know, there's like a saying within the coaching community, and that is that curiosity cured the coach. And right. The intention or the meaning behind that, I think this definitely, you know, parlays into managing and leadership and employee engagement, is that it really, you know, you are often best served leading conversations with curiosity, whether it's just a touch base, whether it's a check-in, whether it's your weekly meet with team members, or it's something more formal, like, you know, a performance review, or sitting down to discuss a policy, or if, you know, there's a violation of some kind. I really think that one of the most useful tools is really approaching these conversations with a level of curiosity that helps you understand what this person's mindset is. Where are they coming from? What's their buy-in? You know, what are their needs? What's going on for them personally? We sometimes forget that people exist and come to work with all sorts of complexities happening in their lives. And the more empathetic and the more compassionate and the more understanding we can be, I think really genuinely serves us to try and meet people where they're at.
Exactly. So today our topic is HR policy development. There's a lot of our listeners out there that don't know what it is. So what is it exactly?
Yeah. So, you know, HR policy development, like truly just at its kind of like baseline, is really making sure that you have policies that reflect the goals, the values, the culture, and, you know, often forgotten the legal obligations of an organization. And so it's one of those things where it really is setting the tone for expectations. It really is setting the tone for what you will tolerate. It really is helping clarify an understanding or expectations around process, which is incredibly important, right? Like, people need to understand not only what is expected of them, but how they navigate that understanding should they come into, you know, a disagreement? Should they not be clear on how to access either supports or tools or communication channels within their organization? And so at its core, though, it really is just about mirroring the type of organization that you want to have and the behaviors and the expectations and the legalities around those things.
We talked before we started taping that people sometimes need to ask questions. And some people are afraid to ask questions. So when we have these policies set up, a lot of people just don't want to ask because they don't want to feel like, oh, I've already been explained this. Everything has been clarified to me. I can't ask this again because I'm going to look like I didn't understand it or yeah. I can't do this job. When again, it's not the case. It's just that some people need more clarification than others.
For sure. And I think people process differently. People have different learning styles. And so, you know, something as simple as onboarding. When we approach things like onboarding, we want to make sure that we're doing it in a way in which we can communicate things like policy in more than one method. So for example, when I do onboarding now, I do it through both a presentation one-on-one with employees, and then they actually get those policies sent to them through Bamboo, and then they nice. Sign off on them in there. And in addition to that, we also have them available on our intranet. So we really try and create more than one touch point because right. often, particularly when we think about what it means to start at a job, people are often overwhelmed, right? Like the initial stages of starting at a job are great, but you're trying to like learn everybody's name and you're trying to understand the policy and you're, you know, nervous about where you're sitting and what your job looks like mm-hmm. and trying to understand, you know, interpersonal office dynamics and mm-hmm. where's the washroom and how do I access things and how do I connect on, you know, meeting invitations or like, it's just there. We are overwhelmed and bombarded by all of these things. So to also expect that somebody is going to process, you know, 10-page policy document or something along those lines, or five different policy documents at the same time that they're trying to immerse themselves into this new environment, I think is highly unrealistic. And so if we can honor that by providing more than one opportunity to be able to review that policy, to read through it, to process it, and then reconnect with them, right? Mm-hmm. Like following up and saying, hey, did you have any questions? Was there anything that was unclear to you? Right. Would it be helpful for you to check in again in 3 months or something along those right. lines? Because like you say, people, you know, they process it differently, rates, they have different understandings of what things mean sometimes. And I think just the sheer volume of information, particularly during onboarding, can inundate people with like, okay, sure, I signed that policy. And you're like, but did we understand the policy?
And there is that excitement when you're starting a new job too, that you're going in, you're going, I'm so excited. This is a new opportunity, a new company. Yeah. It's new, it's fresh. So anytime we're starting something new, fresh, we go into it full bore, sometimes we're just not thinking because we're so excited. I love that you do that one-on-one because I think that that's that cooling down stage of the relaxing the other person and making them feel a little bit more comfortable. They're still excited, but it just kind of relaxes them a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, the other piece is we often think of policy as sort of externally facing. So like communicating to new employees or existing employees as far as what our expectations are of them. When in fact, a lot of policy is really making clear to them the context of what is expected of us. Right? So what is expected of us as employers? What can you expect from us as far as performance reviews? What can you expect from us as far as any concerns that you might have, right? Like what are the processes involved with that? How can we reinforce that these are our expectations and that if they're not followed or if there is a concern around that, that we will address it, right? So I think it goes both ways. And I think sometimes we think of it just as setting the tone and the expectation for our employees. For sure. But if they see that that is not modeled and mirrored, then there you will end up having problems later on.
For sure. So we know what HR policy is now. How is HR policies implemented?
Yeah, so the implementation piece, and I think that this is sometimes where we struggle as organizations, but I think if we're, I think it really falls into three areas. So it's communication. So who, you know, who is going to deliver this? How is it going to be delivered? When is it going to be delivered? Because that really matters and how people receive this. It's going to convey how important and serious it is. It's going to convey, you know, the tone of it. Right. And it's also the format in terms of whether or not this is something that you want to engage employees on, or whether or not this is something that you are simply letting them know about.
Okay.
And so how you navigate that communication piece, I think, is sometimes where organizations struggle. You really have to put yourself in the shoes of the employee. Like, how are they going to receive this? Because if this is something that is best served, you know, starting with an initial conversation between their direct manager on a weekly one-on-one, letting them know that, you know, we're reviewing some changes, there may be some policy adjustments, you may be able to get their buy-in a lot more confidently than if you just roll out a policy via email without any conversation or opportunity for concerns to be addressed or feedback to be received.
Right.
I think the other two areas that are most important are training and then enforcement. And so we touched a little bit on training already, but that aspect of policy is so critical, right? Because a lot of people come in, they do it as part of their onboarding, and then they like never discuss policy ever again,
right,
unless there's a concern or an issue. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, or they get into the habit of like signing off on it if it's an annual review, and then that's it. And I think it really needs to be messaged more consistently and more as a conversation with managers and reminders, just an ongoing touch point, as opposed to this sort of abstract policy that's been created by somebody that nobody really knows who, and they don't only see it as like, oh, well, we only talk about that, or we only, you know, address this policy if there's a concern.
Right.
Instead of recognizing that it can help form kind of the backbone of your culture. And when we talk about enforcement, and, you know, we touched on this a little bit as well, but if you are not modeling this within right. your leadership teams, you know, within team environments, not just leaders, but people who are simply being onboarded, if they're not able to visibly see that you take these policies seriously and that you will respond if there are any concerns around them, then you're going to end up with culture problems.
Yes.
Right? You're going to end up with workplace problems, because it's one thing to have policy, but if you are not willing to consistently and unapologetically follow that, then I think you're going to create a lack of trust.
Yeah.
And policy is funny, because on the one hand, you know, there are absolutely necessary policies that are required. But I always say, like, sometimes policy comes out of a conversation that you actually need to have instead. And so sometimes we create a policy for an entire team or organization without recognizing that it's actually just a conversation that we need to have with one individual. Policy is great because it does provide a lot of structure and a lot of standardization and consistency as far as expectations, but it also can prevent us sometimes from being more agile. And we see this in large or bureaucratic organizations. And having worked at the university, I can attest to the fact that some of the challenges around this are that the policy that applies to really large teams and really large organizations, sometimes that trickle down to a team. I worked in a very small team of like 3 or 4 people. And that policy was very challenging in that small of an environment. And it required us to be quite agile in terms of decision-making, turnaround times, planning, those types of things. And so I think you have to be mindful of having the right amount of policy, right? Yeah. The policy that really helps reinforce the behaviors and the expectations you want without crippling or limiting, you know, managers' ability to pragmatically address and support employees, or teams being able to make decisions and pivot or move forward. And so I really think it is kind of a balance of those things. And that comes into play when you're looking at things like enforcement.
So I've worked in environments where an email is sent out. In the email, it's talking about something, but it's not for the full team. It's for an individual. That is more of a one-on-one conversation. So you're getting that email and then you're saying, I don't get this. Like, what does this have to do with me? So it's so interesting to me that you'd said that, because it made me think of my younger years of working in places and being so confused. And then having to ask people, like, did you get that email? Was it directed at everybody? And they're like, oh, I'm not sure. It might be directed at so-and-so. Or
right.
There's that rumor mill and the conversations about, you know, what it is, when it didn't need to be sent out. That person just needed to be having a conversation with their supervisor, manager, leader, and they have a one-on-one and discuss it, just the two of them.
100%. And, you know, I think that's always kind of the first question is like, is this really a policy? And I think when you're asking yourself that question, what you're asking is like, who benefits from this? right? Does this create a safer work environment all around? Does this help set an expectation that is clearly aligned with our values? Does this help set the tone for behavior that, you know, could be explicitly coming from sort of a legal standpoint? Right. And so I think you have to get really, really clear on your intention behind that policy.
For sure.
But I mean, I have seen, you know, people being more comfortable with rolling, writing out and rolling out a policy than being willing to necessarily have a uncomfortable conversation right. with a single employee about something that is of concern. And sometimes, you know, that policy has the opposite effect, because what it does is, like you said, the rumor mill starts buzzing and people know, right? Like, we sometimes forget that if we send out a policy all of a sudden about, you know, and this is from my own experience, but it's working at a job where the sound of somebody walking through our office, this is quite a few years ago, and their flip-flops, right? And oh. the flip-flop of their flip-flops. And then about, you know, a week later, we all received an updated dress code policy around, you know, closed-toed shoes and things like that. And you all knew, like you 100% all knew where it was coming from and what it was about. Yeah. When, if we're being honest, you know, does that benefit the organization as a whole? Potentially. It also could just as easily have been a conversation with a singular individual about their footwear choice, right? Sometimes we're trying to balance the legal implications of these things. We're yeah. trying to balance, you know, the morale mm-hmm. of an employee. And their manager's ability to have that conversation, or HR's right. ability to have that conversation. And so we just want to be mindful of, like, asking ourselves and getting clear on what is the intention behind this, and does this serve the organization as a whole?
It's that trust and respect factor, right?
Yes.
'Cause I mean, that person is probably reading that email. They know it's about them. But then, but everybody else, but they're like, oh man, they're just cringing because they're reading right? it. And they're like, oh my God. When they could have just been brought in and talked yeah. about it. I could think back probably 15 years ago working at a company, and they talked about dress code. And I don't know, I think I was wearing runners or something like that. And, you know, my boss said, hey, just want to let you know that you can't wear runners to work. It's got to be kind of like a dress shoe. But if he wrote that in an email saying you're not allowed to wear runners, then I would have cringed, because I'd been like, oh my God, that's me. And yeah. everyone else would have been talking about it. And they would have been like, yeah, it's Andrew. When it could have been just a very quiet conversation, and I would have respected it. I would, no problem, I won't wear them anymore. So it's just something simple that I think we forget as leaders to just think before we send that out.
100%. And you know, it's funny, like we don't currently have a formal dress code, and there's some intention behind that. And part of that is that I genuinely, I genuinely feel like I, you know, hire people that I really trust can make right. good decisions. Mm-hmm. And it really does start with some of the basics, right?
Right.
Like, so I think it's really important sometimes, and, you know, it's not to say that there aren't times in which you will have to have conversations, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody has different expectations and comes
For
from
sure.
very different industries, right?
Because
industry can have a significant impact on this. But I think it's so important, and you touched on this, and, you know, you used the term respect, and I try and focus on the term dignity, because I feel like there's
yeah.
a sort of broader scope to that.
Yes.
But I think that we always want to be mindful of having conversations where we treat people with dignity. And mm-hmm. part of that is simply conveying our expectation. And it could very well be as simple as, just so you're aware, our expectation or our definition of casual dress includes dress shoes as opposed to runners or closed-toed shoes or whatever that is, instead of creating a policy. Because sometimes what happens is these policies become slippery slopes. Mm-hmm. And so what starts out with closed-toed shoes then becomes, you know, a conversation about, like, well, like platforms or slingbacks or like whatever this is, right? Like, or like you say, runners or something like that. And so I just think sometimes we are best served in focusing on the singular issue at hand, mm. as opposed to turning it into 10, 15 or 20 different issues that
absolutely
we maybe don't want to deal with, because we might not have to, right? I mean, I really do trust that people will have good judgment and make good decisions
yeah.
On my team. And that's kind of my starting point. And then if we have to have conversations from there, we can. But I like to start at the baseline of, I trust that you are an adult who can manage these decisions.
Absolutely. So how does AI work into the context of HR policy and implementation?
I think AI is brilliant. I honestly think that AI, like the future of HR and AI, I see it as one of the greatest tools that we can use in our jobs. And the reason that I say that is because HR is genuinely a very administratively heavy area. Mm-hmm. And when we consider that, you know, the largest investment that we are making is typically in people. And so when we look at the true value add of really great HR people, it typically comes down to, like we talked about, rapport building, it comes down to coaching, it comes down to employee engagement. And a lot of those areas, you know, performance management even, a lot of those areas are really best served by humans. And so if we can increase somebody's capacity, if we have, you know, an HR generalist, or we have an HR manager or a business partner, and we can increase their capacity by reducing that administrative heavy load through AI, I really think that that is how organizations are best served. Mm-hmm. You know, very specifically though, I think AI comes in with three very serious advantages for every organization. And so one is really streamlining processes. And, you know, that could be recruiting, that could be, you know, metrics or performance management pieces, policy, you know, things like ChatGPT or things like that, helping support writing policy can be incredibly beneficial just as a starting point or just as a template to, you know, springboard off of. The second would be any administrative tasks. And HR can sometimes be a bit of a catch-all. You know, sometimes things fall under the HR umbrella that just happen to be office things that they kind of push over to them. And so I think there are often administrative tasks that you could utilize AI for. And then the third is it really can help reinforce that when we're talking about policy, things like ethics, right? So, or legal aspects of that. And so one example of ethics would be, you know, in the recruiting process. And I was talking to another HR professional who I know, and she had a manager who was very explicit about the school that they wanted their candidates to come from an engineering background. And so other candidates were just not being vetted. And so you can use AI tools through things like the recruiting process to remove some of those bias, right? Mm. And partly that would be, you know, coaching and conversations in our role from HR leadership positions. But I think sometimes the reality is that if we have tools that we can implement to, you know, in addition, help support that, I think that we should use them, because I really do think that it can help in terms of making sure that we are doing things in that process. We are, you know, honoring the sort of ethics and the integrity of what we're trying to accomplish as an organization.
Yeah. I love when you talk about people and investment and your conversation with your HR counterpart or connection. One of the things that people are afraid of doing is applying to jobs because they look and they see in the job description of what that job is looking for, whether it be schooling or whether it be experience. And I'm not talking about director roles or high ranking positions, but my thought is that, or what I tell them is that you can transition to pretty much any position because you've learned stuff through other jobs that you've had. There's tasks and there's experience that you've had from other jobs. So you can apply to those jobs. Am I saying you're going to get them? No, but in some cases you would, because I'm finding more, and you can tell me what you think, but I'm finding people or organizations are looking at a lot of the soft skills of people rather than the hard skills. And those hard skills are great. But for example, I was telling somebody this past week, if I had a mother who had four children, a single mom, four children, and she was out of work for 4 years, but she came to see me and I had this position that I felt she was a good fit for, I'd hire her in a heartbeat. And why would I hire her in a heartbeat? Because she is a hardworking individual. We talked about parent leadership earlier. She is a leader. She's taught four people in her household or led them in their household. Mother's job doesn't quit at 8 to 5. It's a 24-hour job. So again, I would hire someone in a heartbeat that's a mother of four if I was in that position. And I would go, but I mean, that would be my hard skill, that she's hardworking, she's dependable, she's loyal, and you know, she's a good communicator. These are things I would look at. And maybe he's looking at the schooling, but I feel like he's missing out on some really good candidates or people that could be part of his team that could be there for a long period of time.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you're talking about like technical skill set versus kind of people skills or soft skills, as we tend to call them, which I always feel like soft skills is a little bit misleading because it kind of implies that they're like, you know, either less important, less tangible, and yet they are the most tangible thing. It is one of the first things you will notice when you meet somebody that, you know, doesn't have them.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, to kind of touch on all of the points that you made there, because I think they're so valid. And on the one hand, we see this in a stark contrast in how people approach job postings. And so typically, and I don't recall the exact statistic, but it's something around men will typically apply for a job if they qualify for roughly 60% of the job posting that they see. Women, on the other hand, will typically only apply if they qualify for 100%, which is kind of absurd when you think about it, because A, the chances of that happening are slim to none, right? Like, I mean, you're going to get pretty close, but you're not going to get there. Mm-hmm. And you're missing the essence of that job posting. Mm-hmm. The essence of that job posting, and, you know, anybody who's HR, you can read between the lines on job postings, but the essence of that job posting really comes down to the person, right? Like, can you deliver on sort of the overarching goal of that job?
Right.
And so you may not have all of those specific qualifications or experience, but that doesn't mean that you can't deliver on that.
No.
I coach a lot of women. I have a separate coaching practice, and I coach a lot of women who are, you know, post-divorce, returning to the workforce, whether they have to as a result of the breakdown of their relationship or whether they are doing this as a result of just, you know, reinventing this next phase of their life. And some of them have been out of the workforce for a couple of years, and some of them have been out of the workforce for 10, 15, or 20 years. And what is fascinating to me, and part of my coaching practice, is to really help these women objectively step back and assess themselves accurately.
Right, right.
And so I just actually had this conversation with somebody who, you know, has a special needs child, has three kids in total, has been out of the workforce for, you know, quite a few years, is wanting to return and needing to return. And, you know, she has a master's degree in business. She has, you know, a specialized degree in addition to that on an undergrad basis. And she said to me, like, you know, I know that I'll just be applying for entry-level jobs. And I understand that, you know, I'm going to have to start at the bottom. And as she's sharing all of her skills and her experience and her education with me, I just invited her to step back and to say, okay, let's take your name off the resume. Let's take the dates off of the resume. And let's just assess how you would, you know, interpret this candidate. Would you qualify them as a beginner, you know, entry level? Would you qualify as intermediate or advanced? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until that moment where she kind of realized how much of her own self-doubt she was projecting on me.
Right.
Because in my mind, and I literally had to keep myself together. I was like, what is happening in this moment? Because we do such a disservice to ourselves by assuming that, you know, that gap, that career gap, for whatever reason, really reduces the impact that we can have. And I think, you know, one of the best acronyms that I have ever heard, and I apologize for not knowing the source in this moment, but one of the best acronyms that I have ever heard for understanding, and I teach this and coach this with women who are looking to return to the workforce, is PIE. And so there is a baseline technical skill set that you are going to require for whatever job you are applying for. But the core of your success is going to come down to people, building rapport, building relationships, ideas. Do you have ideas that have a high value add? And execution. Can you actually execute on those things? Because if you have somebody who exhibits, you know, a high level of value in those three areas, you have a rock star. Like, you have an A player. And I care a lot less about whether or not you've been out of the workforce for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. than I do about somebody who can deliver in those three areas. Mm-hmm. Because I can build, especially from an HR perspective, I can build a lot of that technical skill set. We can train on that. And that's one of the big assessments, right? Like when somebody comes to me and is struggling in their role, or a manager comes to me and is struggling with an employee, one of the first questions is always, is this a skill gap? Mm-hmm. Like, is this just something that we need to support in training? Because that is one of the easiest solutions out there, right? It is much more complex when we're dealing with like interpersonal skills, communication. Those softer skills are way, way, way harder to teach people. So if I have someone who already has that skill set, all day long, I can help support you in terms of training. Mm-hmm. If it is just, you know, a certification or, you know, a training module or some sort of diploma or just a coaching session of some kind in terms of the technical skill set, man, the amount of hours that you spend as an HR professional in soft skills, it's way more complex. So if I'm already starting with somebody who is there, it's like I've already won the lottery. I can just backfill the technical skill set, right? We can get you up to speed. But that PI ideology is, or that acronym is honestly one of the key factors. And I reinforce that all the time. Like your people skills, your ideas, and your execution. That is the recipe for success. The rest we can figure out.
And I'll just add to that is that you, and I think when you talk about people applying or not knowing, I think where that comes from is when people are applying for jobs and companies are saying, well, you know, we're not continuing with you, or you know because you don't fit the ideas or what have you that we're looking for. Well, a mother who hasn't been out of work for a few years because they decided they want to stay home and take care of their children and they're trying to get back into the workforce. There's a lot of companies out there who will look at their resume and they'll say, oh, you know, I see you, there's a couple year gap. And then you explain it, say, well, yeah, I decided to stay home and take care of my children for the last couple of years. And then they'll be like, okay, well, yeah, but I don't understand what there's no understanding what the gap is. They decide to stay home to take care of their kids. That's a job. Stay home mom is a job, regardless of however you want to think about it. And it's probably one of the hardest jobs that you're going to ever have to do as a mom. So
hands down, it is the hardest job.
Yeah. So we need to get away from that mindset.
Yeah. But you know, here's the thing. I really think we need to normalize not asking people about career gaps. People take career gaps for all sorts of reasons.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I have seen it from health perspectives, whether they are burnt out and they require that. You know, I have had periods in my life where I have taken career gaps as a result of that.
For sure.
And, you know, people take it for caregiving, whether it's their children, whether it's supporting their partner. You know, sometimes people take career gaps because it really is the pragmatic, you know, solution to helping support one partner excel in their career at a specific season of life.
Absolutely.
And I have also seen it from caregiving from a parental standpoint.
Yeah.
And I really think there is so much value in acknowledging that career gaps are quite a normal part of your career pathway. Yeah, and we assign all sorts of meaning and ask people to justify themselves without recognizing that there isn't a whole lot of value in that response. Like when we really think like, what is our intention behind this? What we're actually trying to usually discern, or what people are trying to discern, is that, you know, it's that pattern of reliability. That typically is what somebody is looking for when they're wondering, why did you jump around, or why were you not here for long periods of time? And I just think that there are better ways to gauge that or inform that rather than questioning or feeling like I have the right to know. When we think about, you know, privacy and we think about personal lives and all of those components, I'm not sure that simply because you have applied for a job at my organization that I necessarily have a right to know why you took 3 years off.
I agree with you 100%. What is the one takeaway that you'd want our audience to get from this episode?
You know, I think if we get back to that policy piece, I think policy can really provide a lot of value to an organization. I think that policy is really and truly all about getting clear on the intentions behind it and making sure that it really does add the value that you're looking for. And what I mean by value is it reinforcing the values of the organization? Is it reinforcing the cultural component, legal aspect? And more importantly, it's like, is it helping create the culture that you're looking for? Like at the end of the day, that is the goal. Because if it prohibits you or prevents you from being as agile as you need to be, I think it's something that you really have to reassess if there isn't a better way of doing that. Because at the end of the day, you really want to, you know, be reinforcing this employee well-being and this cultural piece all of the time. So finding ways to use policy to do that, I think is just, it can be such a great tool. You just have to be mindful of whether or not you're using it, you know, in a way that really truly serves you.
We're looking at a job description that we can see and we can understand that this company has strong policies that I value and I admire. And that's kind of why I want to be part of that organization. So I think it's super, super important.
And just honestly, one last thing in touching on what you just said was, and I say this to people when they come in for interviews, because sometimes there is still this sense of a power dynamic in an interview. And well, obviously, you know, you are here to impress me. You are here to let me know you're the right person for the role, right? Fundamentally, interviews are about assessing whether or not they are a right fit for you as much as you are a right fit for them.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, policies often reflect that as well. And so be mindful of that, right? Like, ask about policies in an interview, inquire about, you know, how they frame those things, how they frame performance management, how they ensure that their culture is reflected in those pieces. But, you know, truthfully, like reminding yourself that this really is an assessment for both sides as to whether or not this is a fit, and policy is really just an extension of those things.
Hillary, I want to take the time to thank you for coming on today. This has been such an amazing conversation. I've had the opportunity to talk with you previous, and what I admire about you is you're genuine and you're vulnerable about everything that you do. I could just hear it in what things that you say, and I could just hear the passion and the compassion in your voice for who you are and what you do. And I truly admire that, and I'm super happy that I have you as a connection in my network. And again, thank you for coming on today. And I look forward to future conversations and who knows, possible work down the road here.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. We've had a couple of conversations. I know we've connected with a bunch of different people as well within our network, and I've appreciated that. I appreciate all of that. And at the end of the day, I think that people always genuinely really just want to feel seen.
They do.
And whether it's, you know, in their personal or their professional relationships. And I think when we can really show up and recognize that we are all human beings trying to figure it out and do the best that we can, I think there's a lot of power in creating professional relationships in the workplace where people genuinely feel seen and valued. Thank you.
You're very welcome. On behalf of myself and my guest, Hillary, I'd like to thank you all for listening today. Until next time, be safe. And remember that if we all work together, everyone, we can accomplish anything.
Take care.